some football!
Oh, intermission.
No, it's halftime.
Here comes Beckett. Down goes Shaw. The ball is out. Arkansas's got it at the 1 foot line.
Blue!
Yes, sir.
Do you trust that I do not want to see you die here tonight?
Sir, yes, sir.
Blue, you're my boy!
You can actually feel Razorback Stadium shaking underneath our feet right now.
I don't want them to gain another yard.
Here's the God in football.
Can't wait. The next game, and the years to come, because victory is going to be habitual.
You're listening to the Halftime Podcast.
What are you expecting this weekend? If you look at the betting lines, they've been expecting a blowout from the very start. When you look at some of the previews that have been written across many of the websites inside the paper and listen to the comments from the so-called experts, they're expecting probably the same thing that you were expecting, which is an Arkansas loss. And now I kind of wonder what it is you're expecting. What sort of score do you expect to see? We talked yesterday a little bit about what we would hope to see in a positive light, some of the areas of improvement, and maybe some of the things to take away from a game if you end up losing. And we even talked about the idea of just being competitive in a game inside your own league. And really, that's when you really want to be focusing on winning, not just being competitive. But I'll bring in Ty Richardson, my co-host here. And Ty, really, the expectations are awfully low, I think, for generally everybody heading into this game outside the Arkansas locker room. And if you're the Auburn Tigers, this is your chance now to sort of reset the season and pick up the pieces after the loss to LSU last week and try to move past that. And I think if you're Auburn, you're thinking this is the perfect time for a struggling Arkansas team to come into Jordan-Hare.
Yeah, I can't remember heading into the game with the University of Arkansas with not even the slightest bit of optimism that the Razorbacks might pull it out. But I don't think a single person in this state or even outside of the state expects the Razorbacks to win. And that's just a weird feeling. It's not a feeling that I think I've felt in my lifetime when it comes to any of the games that I've watched Arkansas play or going to play. And I just, it's an odd place to be, Phil, for this program, this fan base, this coaching staff, because not only do the fans don't think you can win, I don't think there's many players in that locker room that think they have a chance to compete in this game, which is sad to say at this point, because once again, this was a program that was in a BCS bowl, had an 11-win season not too long ago. I mean, 7 years is not that far off. I know college sports and professional sports teams and coaches change all the time. But that just was not to be at this point now. It's sad, and you just wonder if it's going to get any better.
And again, that's a lot of what we talked about yesterday was what sort of things would you want to take away in order to see a team that is going to be competitive in a game that a lot of folks don't really even expect them to be very competitive. We talk a little bit about the offense being simplified. Right now you're hoping for a quarterback to step up and lead the team offensively, and for any of the flaws that you have on the offensive side of the ball, and really that's the unit that has struggled more than anything else. Even in the loss of Colorado State, a couple of first downs here and there may get you a win. Occasionally the pass protection is broken down. Running backs have had trouble at times hitting holes that have been there, but it really has come down to quarterback play. And the best thing I'd like to see is for Ty Story early in the ball game is to hit some open receivers. And really, it should never come to something that simple early in a football game involving an SEC team. I almost feel like I'm talking about a lower level of college football when you're hoping to see your quarterback just hit the open receiver early in the football game and maybe generate a little rhythm offensively, because there was no rhythm against North Texas. The rhythm against Colorado State was minimal and just based upon the run. And really, if you're going to have a rhythm for a Chad Morris offense, you're going to need to have a quarterback that's hitting open receivers.
Yeah, and Chad Morris addressed this earlier this week, that they're going to simplify the offense. And you wonder what him and Joe Craddock are thinking with these quarterbacks. They're trying to figure out something, and it's the old phrase. The most insane thing to do is to keep trying something and expect the exact same result. So you're hoping that them tweaking the offense a little bit, making it a little less complicated, will help out Ty Story and the other quarterbacks. But that being said, if it doesn't, if Ty Story struggles once again on the road at Auburn, which at that it's a tough place to play, so I don't think he's not going to struggle. I think he's going to have a tough time going against that defense. But you just hope he plays a little bit better. You hope he hits some receivers. And like you said, Phil, that's not asking a lot. You're asking the guy to play not out of his mind, but just have a solid game. I don't expect Ty Story to throw it for over 400 yards and 5 touchdowns against this defense. But I think asking for over 200 yards passing and 2 touchdowns, that's not out of the realm of me being oversimplifying, saying, hey, you need to do this or blah, blah, blah. That should be expected, especially in this offense. And I don't think I'm overstating what Chad Morris wants. He's not going to expect the world of Ty Story this weekend on Saturday, but he's going to expect him to show a little bit of improvement against a really quality defense.
877-377-6963 is the phone number to get on with us and let us know what you are expecting and maybe give me an answer to another question that I'll give to you here, Ty. Again, it's 877-377-6963. Before I ask you the question, you can also tweet to us. I'm at Phil Elson PXP. He's Ty Sports Radio. And a couple of I tweeted at the start of the show, what do you expect this weekend? I've got a couple of answers. One was a GIF, a GIF.
You said it right. I'm proud of you.
Of Mr. T, Clubber Lang from Rocky III, and it's just one word, and it's Clubber Lang looking into the camera saying pain. This fan, Kyle Stiles, expects pain this weekend. Jackson Braswell, who I know listens up in Northwest Arkansas, says he expects a shutout. And he didn't say what team he expects to shut out the other, but I think we can sort of we can glean what his answer
might
is.
Might be able to figure that out, Phil.
We don't need to tell us for us to know what he's saying. All right, so here would be my question. And again, this is a question I'd have for anybody out there, because in this day and age of legal gambling across the sports landscape, if I were making prop bets for a sports book, and you know, you go on the over under. Who's going to win the coin flip? Length of national anthem is usually one of my favorite ones. Over under on number of quarterbacks that play for Arkansas. And really, that could be a question. That could be a prop bet going into every single game for the Razorbacks. We've already had 5 quarterbacks get out there and take at least 1 snap. So the over under, and I'll set the line, is 2.5. And really, that would be the season line for every single game for the rest of the year. Over under quarterbacks playing 2.5 at Auburn. Ty, this is a day where we make picks, Ty. We make picks today. We've got Aaron Torres coming on at the bottom of the hour. Aaron, of course, from Kentucky Sports Radio and from Fox Sports Radio and the National Online. He's an expert at these lines and the over-under. He'll give us some of his picks. We've got picks to make involving 3 games across the college football landscape. I picked one out of the NFL that I'll say is a lock. I don't give locks very often.
Did you bet $1,000 on it like Cowherd did this week?
I would put $1,000 on the NFL game that I'm going to pick during our second hour. And then we will make fearless predictions of the Arkansas-Auburn game. But the first one for today, the first pick for today, Ty Richardson, is up to you, to the over-under on Razorback quarterbacks that play tomorrow at Auburn.
I got a weird feeling it's going to be under, and here's why. I think that Ty Story is going to play the majority of the game, but he's not going to perform. But Chad Morris is going to go with this gut and stick him in there for the majority of the game. And then I think at the very, probably end of the third, beginning of the fourth, I think he's going to go with Connor Nolan. I do not think we're going to see Cole Kelly this game. Now, I don't have any information telling me that. I don't have any inside sources that I've talked with about that on the team. That's just my gut feeling heading into this week. So there's not a lot of validity behind that. That's just what I think.
And if you're judging from the first 3 games, just because you don't play 1 week doesn't mean you're not going to play the next week. I mean, Ty's Story was left on the sideline against North Texas. It doesn't look like it's about the week of practice any longer. It seems more than anything it's about what you do in the game or what you have done in a game at some point. So really, the most accurate throwing or throws for any quarterback this year for Arkansas was the 2-quarter stretch that Story had. And doesn't it feel like that's what they're going on? Just those 2 quarters against Eastern Illinois because Kelly has been inaccurate much more often than not, and you haven't seen enough of Connor Nolan, and you're not going to start him right now, the first game of the SEC. So, I mean, really, you're going off of maybe two quarters for why Ty is out there starting tomorrow.
And it's pretty sad that that's the best piece of play that you can pull out of this season against the worst competition at home, Eastern Illinois, two quarters that Ty Story played. And he did look good in that game, but that is just not a good sign moving forward, especially if the end of 2018 concludes and that is the best quarterback display that you see from any of these guys this season. You hope that's not the case. Something tells me it might be, though, unless one of these guys really break out. But, Phil, nothing I've seen so far from any of them. I like what I saw from Connor Nolan, probably like a lot of Arkansas fans did. But nothing really solidified me thinking, hey, one of these guys is going to step up sometime this season. Nothing has shown that to me so far.
Let me change the dynamic here back to what we were first talking about, the sense of dread, you know, what you're expecting this weekend at Jordan-Hare Stadium. And I can't remember, at least in the last 4 years, any other game that compares the day before to what I think most fans are feeling, what they're going to see, or what they'll watch for a couple of quarters and then maybe find something else to do. But if you go back to Coach Bielema's first season, you know, after the loss, the homecoming loss to South Carolina, 52-7, you were going to Alabama the next week. Bama was ranked number one in the country, and that to me, I remember that the lead into that game, and I think it was the same sense of dread. You know, that was on the road at Alabama. This is on the road at Auburn. I haven't had any success against Alabama in what has been 10 years now.
And haven't Auburn, won since 2006, yeah.
And Auburn has, I mean, we know what's happened the last couple of years. Really, it's been 4 years in a row, or four out of the last five. So, I mean, I can't remember in the last five seasons any game like this where you're feeling that any more of a sense of dread. And then, I mean, we keep talking about this gauntlet coming up. Past the A&M game, then it's Alabama again. Then it's a whole other week of dread.
Absolutely. And this is the gauntlet of the SEC schedule that Arkansas is having to play. At Auburn, Texas A&M, Alabama at home, and then Ole Miss and Little Rock. This is the hardest part of the schedule. There's no denying that. You got offense galore in these next four games. It's going to be different styles. You got up-tempo from Auburn, Jared Stidham, one of the better quarterbacks in the league. Then Texas A&M, which is more of a pro style now, under Jimbo. Travion Williams, one of the best running backs in the conference. Then you got two in Alabama, which just look to be on another level right now. And then you close this stretch out with Jordan Tamu at home against, and I say at home, in Little Rock. That is a brutal stretch for a defense that unfortunately is not going to get a lot of rest. And we talked about on the Change My Mind segment earlier this week that you think Auburn's going to have less than 300 rushing yards. And I just can't see that happening because I don't think the Arkansas offense is going to stay on the field based on what we've seen with them not being able to convert on third down. That's going to tire this out. By the time this stretches up, the Arkansas defense and John Chavis, they're going to be worn out. And you just got to wonder if they're going to be able to hold up the rest of the season with this stretch.
You know, I want to ask you about Jared Stidham. And you've talked a lot about his talent and looking like an NFL quarterback. This is something we'll bring up later on this show when the voice of Auburn Tigers football, Rod Bramblett, joins us during the second hour of our show today. Stidham, I mean, you've talked about it. You think he could be a first round pick,
mm-hmm.
but he's not a guy that Auburn seems to lean on all that heavily to win games for them. When you compare, perhaps what he means to what other quarterbacks in the SEC West mean to their team, or how much more those clubs lean on those quarterbacks. Guys like Tua or Kellen Mond or even Joe Burrow that we saw with LSU, Nick Fitzgerald, you mentioned Tamu. Stidham, although he's got all the physical tools, he hasn't been asked to, at least not yet, lead the team in a way that maybe the offensive line and their running attack leads the way. That's what you think about with Auburn now. It's that running game. But they've got a quarterback in Stidham that's got all the tools and the pedigree to be a guy that can win a game for them.
Yeah, and he had a really poor showing at home against LSU last week. I'm hoping he doesn't do that the rest of the way. But looking at what he's done, go back to the stretch last year when they beat Alabama and Georgia. And they weren't able to beat Georgia in the SEC championship game. But that was one of the best stretches I've seen because no one going into those two games thought Auburn had a quarterback. They didn't see enough from Jared Stidham this season. And I just had an inkling that this guy's going to show up for these two games. Because of Jared Stidham, they were able to beat Georgia, and then they were able to beat Alabama. That stretch kind of solidified my thinking of, hey, this guy's going to be a good quarterback. And now he's been, I don't think he's a projected first rounder. That's what a lot of pundits are saying, a lot of NFL draft guys, from what I've seen. I think he could use another year just to refine his passing ability because, like you mentioned, Auburn's offense is more based on what the running backs do, which is he transferred from Baylor to here. He's going to get less passes and stuff. Gus has always been a ground-and-pound, physical, up-tempo guy rather than chuck it and duck it. So I still think he's one of the better quarterbacks in the league. But personally, Phil, I don't think he's going to have to do a lot on Saturday because I think even though Arkansas has done pretty good against the rush so far, you see, if you follow Randy Ramsey on Twitter, he's been tweeting about the rushing stats. I think Arkansas is just going to get pounded on the ground, not necessarily because of the defense. They're doing a poor job. It's just they're going to be on the field so much. And that's like, Phil, if we decided, hey, we're going to do the two-hour radio show for a month, and then all of a sudden we're going to switch to 6 hours. That like the next month, and we're just going to expect it's going to flow like that. That's not feasible. And so you expect the defense to show up, even though they're going to be on the ground or on the field almost the entire game. That's not fair for Chad Morris to expect his defense to show up with those implications that could happen.
You're listening to the Halftime Podcast. Follow the guys on Twitter at Phil Elson PXP and at Ty Sports Radio.
And it's Joe Adams with a hurdle. Great speed. Adams down the sideline. He's gone. 92 yards for a touchdown.
Baron Torres' picks from last week. And let's bring him in right now. He's from Kentucky Sports Radio, Fox Sports Radio, and The National. The Athletic, pardon me. The National is the old publication that went national for a long time. Hey, Aaron Torres, you had a very good week as far as picks were concerned for our show. I don't know. I think maybe you tried to placate the listeners by picking Arkansas, and that was your one miss. But I don't know how you would look at it for the rest of this weekend. But it's good to talk to you again, and congrats on your success from last Friday's picks.
Well, congrats on you guys for making it through a week and not saying anything to get yourselves fired. I'm proud of both of you.
We tried, believe me. We tried many times.
We were close. It was very close.
I was going to say, I have no doubt that your guys are going to push the line, but hopefully nothing too bad. So it was funny when you were playing that. First of all, great job by you guys. I was wondering if you were going to reference the fact that I just totally whipped on the Arkansas game. So, look, I'm not going to lie, Phil and Ty. I did kind of placate the fans. Look, I thought it would be close. I thought North Texas could win. I think I maybe overplayed it a little bit, but I obviously did not see coming what actually ended up happening. I know it was a frustrating Saturday for you guys, but, you know, better days are ahead. Better days are ahead.
We're just wondering what year those better days are. But there are other games to get to. Here's one question, and this does involve Arkansas and Auburn. I don't want to ask you what you think as far as who will cover this game, but a more likely cover, because there are two games that have the same line involving teams in the SEC West, but one of them involves a team that maybe you would think would be, you know, favored to lose by 29 and one that would not. Arkansas and Auburn, it's the Tigers by 29. Kent State and Ole Miss. Ole Miss favored minus 29. What's a more likely cover?
The more likely cover out of all four of those teams, like who is the most likely?
Yes. No, I mean, who is more likely to cover? Would it be Arkansas at Auburn or Kent State at Ole Miss?
I would say Arkansas at Auburn. Look, you know, I think with this Arkansas-Auburn game is that Auburn's coming in a little beat up, both mentally and physically. I'm not going to be naive enough to say or, you know, try to placate your fans, as you mentioned, Phil, by saying that Arkansas is going to win. But I do think there's something to be said about Auburn kind of coming off a tough week last week. Arkansas maybe feeling like they have something to prove. I don't think it's going to be close. But I also think Gus Malzahn, as they kind of hit the middle of the season here, they've already played two tough games against Washington, against LSU. And this is, by the way, going to sound awful, but I wonder if he calls off the dogs early, because I do think that there are probably bigger games ahead for them. No disrespect to the audience here. But, you know, I just think it's one where maybe it's not close after three quarters. Arkansas scores a couple touchdowns late and it ends up being close.
Sorry for ruining
your guys' whole Friday, though.
Everyone thinks that, Aaron. You're good. Trust me.
Friday was ruined, 2 weeks ago. Today was ruined 2 weeks ago. So don't. It's not you. It's not you. It's us.
Okay.
All right. So before we get into some other ideas of picks here, just a general question about some of the new coaches at programs that are probably more high profile than Arkansas, but Arkansas still belongs on this list. What's a more challenging rebuild? Would it be Chad Morris at Arkansas, Chip Kelly at UCLA, Willie Taggart at Florida State, or Scott Frost at Nebraska?
I'll tell you, I think the most disappointing has been Chip Kelly. I am amazed that he is not getting talked about more nationally. Everyone's so focused on Willie Taggart, but Willie Taggart's played two conference games already, and I'm not giving him the benefit of the doubt, but Chip Kelly is 0-3. I think most people thought that even in a good year he'd be 4-8, 5-7, and he's 0-3. But when people said they were going to go 4-8, they were factoring in the fact that they'd probably beat Cincinnati and Fresno State, and then struggle after that, and they lost to both of them. And so I can't believe nobody's talking about Chip Kelly. Although my guess is that that's probably why he took this job. I mean, we know that Florida was hot after him and that he kind of turned them down because he didn't want to be in that fishbowl, that SEC fishbowl, 365 days a year where you're the focus. And so I do think that's a big reason why Chip Kelly took this job, was to kind of stay under the radar. So I think Chip Kelly's to me been the most disappointing. As far as the toughest rebuild, I do think it is still Nebraska. And I think Scott Frost will get it done. But, the days of them, being a power have changed so much. There is no talent within really drivable distance of that school. So you got to get on a plane. You got to convince a lot of guys to come from different parts of the country. And when they left the Big 12, their pipeline to Texas basically dried up. When they were playing the Big 12, they could sell kids on 2-3 times a year. You're going to be playing in your home state. They can't do that anymore. So I think Scott Frost is going to figure this out, because I think he's really good at what he does. But I also think that rebuild is going to be the toughest. I mean, I've had coaches tell me that Nebraska, of all the kind of former powers that have fallen on hard times, is probably going to be the toughest rebuild simply because of geography.
Aaron Torres, our guest here on Halftime. He is a writer for The Athletic, and he is a podcaster for Kentucky Sports Radio. Aaron, Baker Mayfield, last night, highest rated rookie quarterback up for Pro Football Focus ever, Aaron. I was bummed because I didn't get to watch it because I don't have NFL Network, because I don't pay for it, unfortunately. And
you're a cord cutting millennial.
Yeah,
you can say it. It's okay.
Exactly. What were you thinking watching him do what he did last night?
I was thinking I was going to faint because I was so happy. There's a couple things here at play. I was telling somebody earlier today, I just think this was the perfect football story or perfect sports story. All the stars aligned. It was Thursday night. There's no other games on. Hugh Jackson stubbornly decides that he is going to stick with Tyrod Taylor. Tyrod Taylor goes down. Baker Mayfield comes in. They're down 14-0. And the team is completely re-energized. And then, oh, by the way, they're going up against the guy that everyone said they had to draft over him. I mean, that was kind of the part that was so cool about it. But, you know, my whole thing is I've been a Mayfield guy dating back to last year, and I know you guys hosted various other shows and, you know, at the time, but I've just always loved Mayfield. You know, I'm a little bit of a college football historian, and it really wasn't that long ago that Oklahoma was the school of big game Bob Stoops, the guy that couldn't win the big one, that couldn't win the big games that mattered against the ranked teams that mattered. And Baker Mayfield came in, flipped that program on its head, three straight Big 12 championships, two college football playoff berths, and frankly, if it weren't for Lincoln Riley, they probably would have played for the national championship last year. And so I believe he is a game changer, a program changer, an organization changer. And so I'm not going to lie. Last night was a good night. I was excited. Came home. I was watching it at a restaurant. Came home with a little extra pep in my step. Had a little extra pep in my step this morning. And I am fired up because that Pro Football Focus, I don't know anything about them, but the Aaron Torres Sports Focus says that that's one of the best performances I've seen in a long time.
You think about his history. Walk-on at Texas Tech, injured.
Yes.
Becomes walk-on at Oklahoma. Wins a Heisman. You mentioned the two college football playoff appearances. Gets arrested in our place, Dixon Street in Fayetteville, Arkansas. We have that in the OB. Stopping his Skip Bayless.
Who says Arkansas doesn't have a rich football tradition?
Exactly.
There you
exactly.
go.
Baker, a Heisman was not. We don't have a Heisman Trophy winner, but we have a Heisman Trophy winner that was arrested on our party street.
You might have a Lombardi Trophy winning police officer over there because, man, he stuck it to Mayfield better than anybody on the Jets could, anybody in the Big 12 could. You know, whoever that cop is, you know, they might want to put a chin strap on him and see if he's got any eligibility left. He could probably help that defense right now.
Okay, so going off that, you have him going up against pretty boy Sam Darnold last night, USC quarterback. A lot of NFL guys think he was the best quarterback taken in last year's draft. And this is why, Aaron, I think the NFL is so different from college, because a lot of times in college you have guys that are surrounded by elite talent. And I'm not saying Oklahoma was not a talented school, but looking at their recruiting rankings compared to, say, at Ohio State or USC, they were not as high as recruiting under Bob Stoops as they are under Lincoln Riley. Now, this is the point I want to ask. Especially at the quarterback position, because we see it across the board, a lot of the best quarterbacks in the NFL are not the ones that were elite or played around elite talent in college. How much does that transition change in college to NFL, that the guys that were maybe the best in college don't necessarily translate to being the best in the NFL?
Yeah, it's a great point, Ty. And you know, I think you could make the case looking back that maybe Baker Mayfield made a career for a couple of those guys. I mean, D.D. Westbrook won the Biletnikoff Award as the nation's top wide receiver, and maybe it was because of Baker Mayfield. Joe Mixon, Samaje Perine haven't had, or certainly at least Samaje Perine hasn't had success after he was phenomenal with Baker Mayfield. You know, I'll say this, Ty, and I'll give you guys this theory, and you guys can use it as if it's your own, because I've never heard anybody say this except for me. The one thing, I don't understand why no one realizes this except for me. You look at the elite quarterbacks in the NFL, the one thing that they all have in common, some were three stars, some were five stars, some were no stars, they all elevated wherever they were to a place that they've never been before and they never will be again. So you look at Drew Brees. What did he do? He took Purdue to a Rose Bowl. Aaron Rodgers had Cal. If there was a 14 playoff back in those days, Cal would have been in the playoff. They can't even sniff 500 since. Tom Brady, he was at Michigan. He keeps getting beat out. He keeps finding a way to get back on the field. Deshaun Watson, who I believe in, takes Clemson to their first national championship in 35 years. Maybe to your point, Ty, he had some talent around him. But the point is, all of these guys find a way at the college level to elevate their program, elevate what they do, and I always saw that in Mayfield. It goes back to what I said a minute ago. They couldn't win the big game before he got there, and all of a sudden he gets there, and they're money in big games. They can't lose. And so I don't understand why NFL teams don't value that more. And look, I get that every guy that has success in college, it doesn't always translate. Tim Tebow, Matt Leinart, whoever. But, you know, I just think that when you look at the great NFL quarterbacks, they take their program, they take their school and put it on their back. And I never understand why that isn't more important in the evaluation process in college. And really quick, like just as a quick example, you know, like when Mitch Trubisky was drafted number 2 overall with Chicago, maybe it'll work out. But there isn't a person who watched college football that said that they would take him over Deshaun Watson. And so I just don't understand it sometimes. And that's always been my theory. And until I'm proven wrong, I'm going to stick to it.
Aaron Torres joining us, podcaster from Kentucky Sports Radio, on-air host, Fox Sports Radio. Also read him on The Athletic. We got to get to a couple of the quick picks here. We're coming up against a break. So we'll find out if Kentucky is for real this weekend as they host Mississippi State. Bulldogs favored by 9.5. What are you seeing?
I think it's close. I'm still not sold that Joe Moorhead has made Nick Fitzgerald the true dual threat pocket passer that they said that he would. If Kentucky can keep Nick Fitzgerald from beating them with his legs, it'll be close. I think Mississippi State wins, but I think it's close.
Arizona State stumbled last week against San Diego State after that hot, quick start with Herm Edwards. Better test for them at Washington. 10th-ranked Huskies are favored by 2 touchdowns.
Yeah, I would stay away from that one. I think it was 17 and it's down to 14, which is kind of my thought on it, is that that Washington offense has struggled. Jake Browning hasn't been the same quarterback the last 2 years. Washington wins, but I think Arizona State bounces back, keeps things close, covers that spread.
And let's see here. Got one other game I wanted to ask about, and it's still out there in the Pac, the Pac-12. Stanford and Oregon in Eugene, 7th-ranked Cardinal, are favored by 2.5.
Yeah, this is a really interesting one. I said before the season I thought Oregon was the one team that was completely undervalued that's going to be way better than people realize. They've started 3-0, but they haven't really played anybody. I think they win. I think they're the better team. The only thing that concerns me, Justin Herbert was supposed to be this can't-miss quarterback. His completion percentage is plummeting. He too, is coming off an injury. I think Oregon wins, but I would stay away as a better simply because I'm not so – I need to see what Justin Herbert does under those bright lights, but I do think Oregon wins.
All right, Aaron, we gotta cut it there. We're up against the break.
I know.
Is all,
I talk
always
too much.
We all talk too much. It's a radio show. What do you expect? It's okay, but we do have bills to pay.
5-1 last week, man. Let's see if you got 3-0 this week.
Okay, I had 2 stayaways, so I think I'm only 1-0, but it's okay.
But at least you know we're going to remind you of those picks when you come on next week. So you got to leave it out there. That's right. If you're making picks, you got to make sure that you account for those. Aaron, have a great weekend. Enjoy the games. We'll talk to you next Friday.
Thank you both for having me. Appreciate it.
Subscribe to the show on iTunes. You're listening to the Halftime Podcast.
Trying to extend the play and throw it solid.
Give me your over-under on number of quarterbacks that play. 2.5 is our line. I'm going to go over just because. You just get the sense that that could be the thing that happens once again because you haven't had a game yet, I think, where you've had where you would really expect to see less than two quarterbacks play for a while now.
So we're starting out the show disagreeing because I think it's going to be under two.
That's right. You went under 2.5. If you're going
under two,
it's going to be one guy finish the game.
Under two,
we haven't seen that happen. That'd be a surprise.
That will not happen.
That'd be more than a big surprise, I think.
I think we should add that into our picks. So we have the three games that we're each picking, and then that's a bonus point for whoever's right on that.
And I have 4 games that I'm picking here that included my stone cold lock in the NFL. So I'm kind of doing a little extra work.
Okay, then I'm gonna pick your stone cold lock. Then I'll pick it either with it or I'll pick it against it, just to add on.
Well, usually you just like to disagree with me just because. So why don't you just say I'm going to go against your pick, Phil?
We agree on a lot of things. It's just the age difference kind of will tend to make us disagree on certain things.
Sometimes it takes a little bit of time to get into to figure out how exactly you're going to disagree, and then sometimes I just come around to your point because that was the thing in our segment two days ago. Changed my mind. I still think, and I was not on the debate team. But I'm taking the tack of that's a debate team sort of thing, and I've got to pick a point that I might not even believe in and try to defend it. And I just would have been an awful lawyer, a really bad lawyer in that case, because I can argue something that I believe in. I have a real tough time arguing something that I don't believe in.
You know what my dad always said, because I loved to argue with him when I was younger. My dad always said I would make a great lawyer, and I realized that wasn't smart enough to be a lawyer, so I became a radio host instead. Because it's just like the watered down version of a lawyer. You argue sports instead of law.
Well, without the judge. Well, the listeners are the judge.
Yeah, the
right?
Listeners are the judge.
Listeners are the judge. Who would be the police? I guess there'd be Tommy Kraft.
SEC, right? And Tommy Kraft.
That's right. Exactly right. Well, it also is Friday, and every Friday we got a couple of things we might rather be doing than exactly what you have scheduled going on for at some point this weekend. So it is FOMO Friday. And, Ty, I'm going to let you start off with the first place that you would rather be this weekend, other than where I know you're going to be, which is Temple Live for the pregame show.
So the two hosts I worked for in Nashville, they got to interview Rob Schneider today on the show, which was awesome. And I don't know which movies you like that he's been in, but I'm a big fan of Big Daddy, Grown Ups, The Water Boy. I think the list can go on and on, but I think he's a really funny actor, and I was really jealous when I got an Instagram story update from Joe Dubin, who's one of the TV guys in Nashville, and he's 2 feet from Rob Schneider, and I would be there on Friday, and I'm thinking to myself, man, I missed out. So I'm very happy where I am now and stuff, but as this is, it's FOMO Friday, so I had a little bit of FOMO that he was getting introduced, Rob Schneider, and I was up at whatever this morning, I think I was eating a protein bar, because they interviewed him at, I think, 9:30. So I was eating my protein bar, finishing the podcast for the morning rush, and sure enough, they're interviewing Rob Schneider. So that was my first FOMO of the day, was definitely that.
Well, I'd like to be at Yankee Stadium today. The couple ones that I've come up with here all have to do with where I'd like to be involving baseball this weekend, because you know, if it comes to watching Arkansas-Auburn college football, and this has the FOMOs have nothing to do with college football as far as I'm concerned for this weekend. I'd like to be at Yankee Stadium today because I think this is when the Baltimore Orioles will begin a season-ending 10-game losing streak because they're playing a Yankees team that needs wins to stay atop the wild card race. 3 games at Yankee Stadium. And then they go to Boston for 3. And you know, maybe Boston treats these games differently than they would if they hadn't already clinched their East Division championship. But then again, I mean, they are about 50,000 times better than Baltimore's team is, which right now essentially looks more like a Triple-A team than anything else. And then Baltimore finishes the season with 4 games at Houston. So that's 3 at the Yankees, 3 at Boston, and then Houston for 4. Those are 3 dangerous teams, World Series contenders. So I'm saying that they could end the season on a 10-game losing streak. I'm hoping that it happens because I want to see outright futility. That would mean they would have lost 118 games, which is mind-blowing. The most losses in a major league season, Cleveland, they weren't even the Indians, they were the Spiders. In 1899, they lost 134 games and won, I think, just 20. That's not the modern era, though. The Mets, the first edition of the New York Mets, 62, they lost 120 games. They went 40 and 120. So even if Baltimore ends the season with 10 straight losses, they still wouldn't have lost as many games as Casey Stengel's 1962 New York Mets. So because I'm interested in futility this weekend, I want to be at Yankee Stadium today because, hey, it's New York. It's fun. It's the house that Ruth built, although, you know, that's about 3 Yankee Stadiums ago. You're going to see a real season of futility coming to an end with Baltimore ending the season with 10 straight losses. That would be my first FOMO.
My second FOMO, College Game Day, going to be in Autzen for Oregon this week. Eugene, they'll be in the Autzen Zoo, which is Oregon's football stadium this weekend. Corso gets extra excited when he's at an Oregon game, it seems like. It seems like that's his favorite venue to be at. And I love College Game Day. I've gotten a chance to go twice at Oklahoma State and at Baylor. Haven't had the chance to see it at Arkansas because they've only done it once here in 2006. Longest tenured SEC school that has not had College Game Day. Yes, that's the Arkansas Razorbacks. And I doubt, looking at this team, that they're going to have it anytime soon. So, yeah, I'd really like to be at College Game Day. I think it's going to be a really good game. 2 contrasting styles. Stanford always more of just the power, physical football team. Arizona, Oregon more flashy. Phil Knight, we know about him. Nike guy, just got the flashy uniforms. And I think it's going to be a really good game this weekend. Aaron alluded to Justin Herbert, who is one of the better quarterbacks that a lot of NFL draft guys think is going to have a pretty good season. He really hasn't been on par to what people thought he was going to be so far this season. He has a great chance to really show up against one of the better defenses in the Pac-12 in Stanford. David Shaw will have those guys ready to play. I think that's going to be an electric atmosphere. I wish I was there. I had a buddy that went to grad school there, actually, for accounting. And it was either accounting or some other type of business that I just don't have a lot of clout in. And he talked about that atmosphere in the Autzen Zoo is pretty comparable to an SEC atmosphere. So I wish I was in College Game Day this weekend.
Eugene's supposed to be a great town, not just a great college town, but overall just a fun place to be. So I think and it's beautiful in Oregon. I've never been there, but my sister lives out there with her family. They in Corvallis, and they love Oregon. And so I actually would say that there would be many weekends that I would like to see what it's like to be in Eugene, no matter if there's a football game or not. And then you get maybe the best game of the week with Stanford and Oregon. So game day's out there. What does Corso wear if he picks Stanford? What do you put on your head? Does he have a tree? Does he have a tree to
no
put
way.
On his head?
No way he picks Stanford. He almost always picks the Ducks because of just the theatrics that go with picking Oregon. He's ridden a motorcycle. He's had the duck put on an oversized head of him. Like it's just cool. And it's going to be a sad day when he's taken off the show eventually because he's getting up there in age, because he's been one of the biggest influencers in college football with just the theatrics he puts on Saturday. So I'm going to really miss him one day.
I would love to, you know, there have been some folks who've tried to convince ESPN to do game day in Arkadelphia for the Battle of the Ravine, the Henderson versus Ouachita game, because it's a really unique rivalry. That'll never happen. I'd actually like to see, you know, if Corso had to pick between, let's say, University of Arkansas Monticello or Southern Arkansas, and then he would have to pick between either the Mule Riders or the Boll Weevils. And I would want him to pick the Boll Weevils because I want to see Corso put on a Boll Weevil head. That would go far. That would be a legendary moment. I'm trying to figure out, how do you put a tree on your head? I'd really rather figure out how you put a Boll Weevil on your head.
He's dressed up as like James Madison. I mean, this guy's costumes knows no limits. It's unbelievable that the staffing and the crew, the work they put into what he puts on every week. I think it's what he puts on is better than every 11 o'clock game that I'll watch that day. I am more in tune to what Corso puts on at about 10:58, 10:59 than any of the 11 o'clock games. And yes, that includes Arkansas moving forward, because they're probably going to have a lot of 11 o'clock games.
Where else would I rather be this weekend? I would like to be in Chicago for the Cubs-White Sox series. And because it's fun to be at a stadium where the visiting team has more fans than the home team. And that's what's going to happen. I don't even know what the ballpark is called on the south side of Chicago. I mean, it used to be the new Comiskey. Then it was U.S. Cellular. Now it's some other thing, Guaranteed Rate Field. That's what it is. That's right. So I still call it Comiskey Park. And the White Sox are dreadful, and the Cubs are not. The Cubs are playing for a division title with a 2.5-game lead over Milwaukee going into the last 12-game stretch. The White Sox are just trying to fight their way into third place in the worst division in baseball with 60 wins and 92 losses. And then it's amazing, in a city like Chicago, which is a great sports town, you have one fan base that is known for being passionate and showing up. Although I think if you look back at the history of the Chicago Cubs, they did not always show up, no matter what. And it's the same with St. Louis, the same with Boston. People go to those ballparks now because of the history of it, certainly in Boston and with Wrigley Field they do. One of my favorite memories of going to a game that I didn't have any rooting interest in, I went to a Milwaukee Cubs game in Milwaukee, 2005. Milwaukee stunk that season. The Cubs were pretty good, and there were by probably a multiplication of five, by a factor of five, there were more Cubs fans than Brewers fans. And the Cubs won that game, and so in the last out of the game, I closed my eyes just to see if it would feel like Wrigley Field, and it did, although it was indoors rather than outdoors. But I have a feeling that's what's going on this weekend, because now you get the Cubs playing as well as they have, or at least leading a division, and the White Sox don't know what it's like to lead a division, and the White Sox are averaging one of the worst in baseball as far as attendance is concerned, 19,000 per game. So I think they might sell out at Comiskey this weekend, but by a margin of at least 2-1, there will be more Cubs fans than White Sox fans in Chicago's the Chicago White Sox ballpark. So that's one thing I've always been interested in, that to see the home team have less fans than the visiting teams. That'd be my second FOMO.
Phil, have you ever met a Chicago White Sox fans? Because the only ones that I know that like Chicago are Cubs fans. I have legitimately never met a White Sox fan. Even people that I've seen wear White Sox, say, oh, you're a White Sox fan. It's like, no, just like that. That's what they respond.
There are Cubs fans around the country. And you would say maybe it's because of the WGN thing. The White Sox were also on WGN at the same time as the Cubs. The White Sox played so many more night games that WGN could show the day game with the Cubs and the night game with the White Sox. Some people say it's because of the ballpark, you know, but Wrigley Field and Comiskey Park were about the same age until New Comiskey was built in 92 or 91. I can't put my finger on it, but you are absolutely right. I've known some White Sox fans, but they're all from the south side of Chicago. They are all from that part of town, and it just does not have that fan base. I mean, I look, 19,000 a game in Comiskey. I don't know what the Cubs are averaging, but I'm going to guarantee you it's probably about 38,000 to 39,000. So yeah, the teams are obviously, you know, one is good, one is not, but there's a difference of 20,000 people per game going to those ball games. I think the same would be at Yankee Stadium compared to Citi Field with the Mets and the Yankees too. It's the same idea. You know, there are so many more Yankees fans than there are Mets fans. And Mets fans are pretty much confined to being in the city, in New York. Yankees fans are all across the country because, hey, you know, we're bandwagon fans in the country, so there's a lot of Yankee fans. I think people think that it's really cool to be a Cubs fan. I think a lot of folks think it's cool to be a Red Sox fan because of the retro parks and the fact that those teams have won a little bit more. That's one reason you have more fans. But you point out something that you're absolutely correct about. Every one of us would probably know at least one handful of Cubs fans, even in Cardinals territory where we live in Arkansas. And, I mean, never mind the idea of knowing a White Sox fan on one finger. I don't think you have trouble finding one of them.
I agree. All right, my last FOMO. It had to have been last night. And I'm not a Cleveland Browns fan, but I'm a football fan in general. And what I saw highlight-wise, because as I mentioned, don't have NFL Network, the highlights I saw from Baker Mayfield, the statistics I saw that he put up, what every radio host is going goo goo gaga this morning about his performance last night. I had a little bit of FOMO this morning. Man, I wish I was at that game last night, because it's not often you see a rookie do well, if ever, in his first start. I think Peyton Manning, you brought up that example earlier this week of how bad he was, how poorly he played early on in his career with the Colts, just his interception ratio to touchdown ratio. And so for Baker to come in to a team that had a 19-game winless streak, and to put on the performance he did last night really makes you question Hugh Jackson first. I get it, the head coaching, sometimes what they do in practice is not always indicative of what they're going to do in games. But you have to wonder, Phil, you mentioned this earlier in the show, if Baker Mayfield had started the season, would the Browns be 3-0 right now? And from what I saw last night, I think the answer might be yes, because no offense to Tyrod Taylor, I think Baker Mayfield's the better quarterback on that roster, even as a rookie. So I had a little bit of FOMO that I didn't get the chance to see him in his first win. I'm hoping he pans out, because I really was excited about Johnny Manziel in the NFL. He didn't pan out. We know about his issues with certain substances. Baker has issues, but none of them have been brought to light that have been substance related. He's had character issues, which I like a quarterback, and I like my point guard, and I like a couple players to be cocky. My problem with players being cocky is if you can't back it up, a.k.a. Cole Kelly, then there's no business being cocky. But if you're cocky and you're good and you can back it up, and I mentioned Larry Bird the other day, the reason he was so good and so revered is because he could back up any of his trash talk that he mentioned. That's the same for Baker Mayfield. Baker Mayfield backed it up last night. I hope he does the rest of the season.
It's interesting how many rookie quarterbacks have grabbed a hold of the city and the fan base that they are playing for after just one freaking game. I mean, really, I go back, I don't forget the year that it was, but Robert Griffin III's rookie season with the Washington Redskins, he kind of became, for that season, really like almost a cultural icon amongst Washington, D.C. sports fans. It only lasted that 1 year, different style of playing, and it was more injuries than ability that that did in RG3. But it is interesting, too, because Mayfield's being just elevated to this status, it feels like, already after just one game. And you, I mean, we played it in the first hour, the release, the emotion that those Browns fans felt, and they're looking for a football icon specifically. I mean, they've got baseball players they love. They had LeBron for so long, but now, I mean, they're looking for an icon for that Browns team. They need one,
and they think
they have one after one game.
And I think Baker's the perfect guy for it because he's been an underdog his whole life, and now he's going to an underdog organization. So again, I hope he pans out. Real quick, RG3 story. Real quick, met his dad at Gaylord Memorial at an Oklahoma Baylor football game. As I mentioned before, my dad's a Baylor alum. Saw his dad. We're sitting in the Baylor student section. Saw his dad. Went up to him, say, "Hey, could, anyway, and I'm young at the time. Is there any way your son could send me a piece of paper with his autograph on it?" His dad gave me my number or his number, and a couple months later, his dad didn't send me a piece of paper with an autograph on it. He sent me a signed picture with RG3 and President George Bush.
Wow!
And it said "Two Tie," signed RG3, and it had George President Bush's autograph on it as well. So that's probably my most prized possession. You will never hear me criticize RG3 because of that, or his father.
Winning isn't everything. It's the only thing. You're listening to the Halftime Podcast.